the buzzer has sounded, we are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise joining you on a Wednesday from Knoxville, Tennessee. We appreciate you listening along with us. The base Vols, you know, we've harped on the show about how good the Vols are in the midweek. And the base Vols dropped that streak yesterday against Lipscomb. We'll open up the episode today with that. Any quick thoughts on it? Did we jinx them?
Incredibly frustrating to watch. So much so, in fact, I did not watch the entire bottom of the ninth inning.
I guess we jinxed them. Great action in the NBA last night as well. Yes. Madison Square Garden was hopping, but Tyrese Maxey had other plans. We'll dive into last night's NBA games later on in the hour as well. And as always, we'll give our best bets at the end of the hour. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is the base Vols fall in the midweek. Number 3 Tennessee had its 15-game midweek win streak snapped on Tuesday night after a 9-6 loss to Lipscomb at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The Vols jumped out to an early 4-1 lead after two innings, but struggled in the middle frames as the Bison scored six unanswered runs to take a 7-4 lead heading into the seventh. Lipscomb now improves to 16-27 on the year, scored in four consecutive innings from the third to the sixth and added two more in the eighth after UT pulled within two runs after scratching across a run in the bottom of the seventh inning. Leadoff hitter Alex Vergara did a lot of damage for the Bison, going 3-for-4 with a double and two of the Bison's four home runs, while third baseman David Coppedge also had a big night at the plate, going 4-for-4 with an RBI and three runs scored. Six of the seven pitchers that saw action for Tennessee allowed a run, with Nate Snead being the lone hurler who posted a scoreless outing, striking out a pair over 1.2 innings of work. The duo of Blake Burke and Billy Amick provided the majority of a very bare offensive night for the Vols, very uncharacteristic of them to struggle at home. They combined for five hits and three runs and three RBIs. Burke drove in a pair with a two-out double in the second inning, despite UT an early three-run lead. Amick also had a double and hit his 17th homer of the season with a solo shot in the bottom of the ninth. Lipscomb starting pitcher, really good night for him, settled in. Ryan Cutts, after a rough start to get the win after five innings of pitching, allowing four runs on six hits and three walks. And the relievers did a really good job finishing out for the Bison. You know, this is something we've talked about, kind of going into our takeaways now. It's kind of something we've talked about all season long. Vols have handled business compared to a bunch of other teams in the SEC and around the country. Some of these midweek games, you start kind of looking ahead to what's next on the calendar in terms of who you're playing in the SEC. The Vols have a lot on the line right now in the SEC standings, facing off with Florida, who's a talented club, hasn't really put together this season, but historically a talented club. But I thought yesterday one of the biggest struggles was out of the bullpen. Four of the five pitchers, as I mentioned, that made an appearance at least gave up one earned run. Very uncharacteristic from what we've seen over the past couple weeks. We've been talking, and we talked about it yesterday, you know, an improvement in the bullpen, maybe starting to become a strength of this team. Yesterday was a disappointing performance. Marcus Phillips, we've loved him on this show, gave up three runs yesterday, three hits and two innings of work, a tough day out for him. And the offense yesterday went quiet. And it's really rare that Tennessee baseball, especially under Vitello, has a quiet offensive night at home. You jump out to that 4-1 lead in the second, but you don't get any more offense going from there. The Vols were a 2-for-10 at the plate with two outs, 4-for-18 with runners on, and 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position. Talk about leaving runs and points on the board. Just an uncharacteristic night, really. And, you know, when both – your offense and defense aren't working, you could lose to anyone. And last night was an example of that, as Lipscomb, a team that came in at 15-27, is able to come into Knoxville and get a win. What were your takeaways, Dawson?
I'll start with the pitching. This is a disappointing setback for a group that had gotten so much better, that we wanted to continue to see develop. I know we mentioned Marcus Phillips. It's other guys, too. Ben Key is another one I wanted to see develop. Matthew Dallas. It's just a really disappointing effort because you expected so much more, especially, and I'm not, you know, no offense to Lipscomb. This was a good squad last year. Lipscomb in a regional with Tennessee last year in Clemson, yes. By the way. They were in the Clemson little quad in the regionals. So it's a good squad. They just lost pieces. They weren't the same team as last year. And it's not an extraordinarily good hitting team. Really, none of your midweek opponents outside of maybe Kansas State have been good hitting teams. So, you know, to have this kind of performance, especially from Marcus Phillips, who we thought was going to be that guy, the first of the younger guys, if you will, to kind of get that more permanent role, it's really disappointing. It's tough. But on the other hand, it is not the end of the world. I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. By far not the end of the world, not a panic button moment. Yeah. You know, this is not a multiple games in a row thing. This is a one-night thing, but it's a setback nonetheless. The offense, however, this is becoming a funk. I don't know what's going on. This is weird. Look, six runs is not terrible. Again, I say, no straight to Lipscomb. Their pitching is not great. Ryan Cutts came into last night's game with an ERA touching 8.
Yes.
This was not a guy that was going to go out there and get a shutdown effort. Before last night, you were held in single digits twice in midweek games. Now it's 3 across the entire season, which at this point is double-digit midweek games. You've been in single digits once. You've run-ruled most of those games.
Yes.
And one of them was the home opener back in February.
Yeah.
It's just the way this team was playing coming into last weekend, there's no excuse for whatever off week now that this is for the offense. It's 3 straight underwhelming offensive performances. It's time to start asking questions about the offense. I'm not sure, what the deal is there. And now the biggest thing, your momentum going into, it's a struggling Florida team. We'll talk about that later as well. This is still a big series. Florida's still talented, especially at the plate. To have this kind of pitching performance going into a week where you're going to see a really good lineup, it's not what you need. You need to maintain your momentum through these games. Couple tough outings to end the weekend. I know you got the sweep. You still did not look great in those games. The pitching looked great. The hitting did not look great. You needed that momentum back. Now it's fading, headed into a really big series with the Gators.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about not overreacting because, you know, kind of scrolling through Twitter and looking at the reactions, a lot of people tend to freak out, really, anytime in any sport with Tennessee.
And I'm guilty of it at times, too.
Yes, and I think we all are. But, you know, in this kind of situation, Tennessee's a third-ranked team in the country, had a really good season, just a win away from being tied atop the SEC, and you lose to a team like Lipscomb. A lot of people are going to sound the alarm and start calling for people to be benched or this to be done, or, you know, why are we having rotational pieces, as I lose my pen explaining it. why are we having rotational pieces, guys that usually don't play? Why are they playing? You know, there are a lot of different things and outcomes that come from a loss like this. But I think it's important when you look at the other schools and other teams that are considered some of the top teams in the country, they have lost midweek games and lost games to inferior out-of-conference opponents. So losing one game, you know, out of the 12 midweek games you've had, you're 11-1 in 12 out of the 12, right? That's still really, really good, better than a lot of teams in the country. So, yes, is this a bad loss? Yes, it's a bad loss. Obviously, you don't want to lose to Lipscomb when you're a top 3 team, but it's okay because other teams have also struggled in these midweek games, and you've seen Tennessee perform very well against some of the top teams in the country. You know, just 2 weeks ago, Kentucky, you were able to go to Lexington and win the series, right? So I think it's natural for people to overreact and flip out. But I think when you look at the body of work from this season, just take a step back and say, it's okay.
Welcome to college baseball. That's what I say to people who are overreacting. This is not college football. You know, you're not on the level of parity, you know, where you have, you know, and I'll use this year's football schedule for example. This year's game against Chattanooga in football in September is not going to be like any baseball midweek games. There is, and even college basketball, there's more parity in college basketball than ever before because of the transfer portal. You could say the same about football to a degree. But there's even more in college baseball, and there always kind of has been. Baseball is a sport that naturally has a ton more parity. Any team can win on any given day, and we've seen it happen for years at all levels of baseball. There's good talent everywhere in the country. There are guys that are going to have good performances on the mound.
Yeah.
There are guys that are going to have good nights at the plate. Baseball is so much a sport of if it's your night, it's your night. You're having a great night. That's what Lipscomb did last night. It is what it is. It's extremely difficult to win every game you play, especially in a sport like college baseball that has so much parity, so much talent across the country. And you mentioned the teams across the country. I mean, heck, the team you play tomorrow night, Florida, notably has been – probably the biggest struggling team in midweek games this year.
Yeah.
I think they've lost five or six at this point.
Yeah.
So now, granted, they've had some midweeks against like Florida State, which is a really good team. So you kind of discount that a little bit. But they have lost to teams that they should not be losing to. Kentucky drops one to Samford. Talked about that. Auburn dropped one, I believe, North Alabama a couple weeks ago before you played them. Georgia's dropped midweeks. Mississippi State has dropped midweeks. Wake Forest, if you go outside the SEC, they dropped a couple midweeks. They're the number one team in the country. So, I mean, you know, you're not immune to it. Consider yourself lucky that it took you 12 games to lose a midweek game this year, because you look back a couple of years to Tennessee. Tennessee Tech ravaged Tennessee the last 2 years, a couple of those teams. Earlier in the year, ravaged this Tennessee team. You can't get caught up on it. Move forward. And here's the biggest sticking point that I would tell anybody that overreacts, because I did it too. This team is not going to overreact, so neither should we. They're going to look forward. They're going to learn from it, and they're going to go down to Gainesville tomorrow. And they may take the series. They may sweep Florida this weekend.
Very well could.
And they're not going to overreact, so neither should we.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at Florida right now in their midweek games. Losses to Stetson.
Yeah.
UCF, Florida State.
Florida State's a really good team.
Florida State's good. Jacksonville, however.
Okay.
not a good loss there, too. So, Stetson, UCF, Jacksonville, and Florida State. I guess they struggle. They're not winning the state of Florida battle this year.
No, they are not.
But... yeah, you know, it's natural to overreact, but I think, you know, this is very well could be a wake-up call, kind of like, all right, hey, you know we're good, but we can't go into every matchup just thinking we're going to outbeat someone or beat someone because we're more talented than them,
right,
have a higher ranking than them. But going back to this game specifically, and these are not overreactions, just our analysis on it, what was the bigger disappointment? The Vols' offense at home underperforming where it's been so good this season, and especially underperforming to a 15-win team that had more hits than you, had more runs, or the Vols pitching ending their kind of hot streak on the mound. To me, it's offense, because this, as you know, as we've mentioned, not a great pitching team. Yesterday's starter was right around, I think it was like 7.39 ERA.
Something like that.
Not something to get excited about. So I think it's your home offense really struggling to get going. You started off hot. Couldn't continue it. Offense for me.
It's offense because it's now a pattern. The pitching is not a pattern. That's not something that's been wrong the past couple weeks or the past couple games. And I'll also preface it by saying last night's a lot of young pitchers. Look, they're not going to be perfect. Matthew Dallas, Andrew Behnke, Marcus Phillips, those are really young, really raw guys still. You can't expect them to be completely perfect in every single game they come out and play. They're going to have off nights.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you develop as a player. Everybody that now is even in the weekend rotation has had rough nights. The offense should not be having off nights. There's a bit of a difference there. It's been disappointing at the plate the past three games now. Guys that were hitting the cover off the ball, Christian Moore especially. I mean, he did not have a good night last night at all. And really now the whole lineup is starting to struggle to produce. The problem is not base runners, it's converting those base runners. We had guys on base almost every inning last night, whether from the hit or the walk, but they've gone back to not getting the clutch hits, not getting hits with guys on base. Dean Curley grounded into another bases-loaded double play. Now you got an RBI out of it, still killed the inning.
Yeah.
Later in the night, ground out with bases loaded, you don't score any runs. It happens more than once. You fail to score with guys on and guys in scoring position. We talked about this team. Oh, they've broken through. They have the clutch factor.
Mm-hmm.
They don't right now.
Yeah.
You need more from the bottom of the order, too. That's been a struggle for most of the year. Now, they've gotten it going. Cal Stark has notably kind of gotten things going. Cannon Peebles hit his first home run last weekend as a Vol. So they're starting to get there. But guys like Curley and Inslee, you need to have them going to have 1-9 going. That's what makes this team so dangerous.
Yeah. Tuesday night's defeat snapped a 15-game winning streak in midweek games for the Big Orange. Their last midweek loss prior to Tuesday was a 12-5 setback against Tennessee Tech on April 18th, 2023. UT was 11-0 on the year in midweek games entering the night. Tennessee now drops to 37-8 on the season, still 15-6 in SEC play. We'll look to quickly put this one behind them and head to Gainesville for an SEC East showdown against Florida, which begins Thursday night, tomorrow night, at 7 p.m. on ESPN, nationally televised game for the Volunteers. Talking, kind of segueing into tomorrow's game, what do they need to focus on heading into tomorrow, kind of taking away what happened yesterday? What should they focus on? I think it's got to be getting this offense out of the funk, you know, getting this offense back in its groove. Obviously, yesterday, a little bit of a different lineup because it's a midweek game. I don't think Tears was in the lineup yesterday.
He was a pinch. He came off the bench.
Okay, came off the bench.
He had a couple at-bats.
So kind of getting the lineup back to normal, your starting group, and getting this thing rolling again. Obviously, a very talented Florida team, but not a Florida team that's performed up to their expectations. This is a winnable series for Tennessee, and it starts tomorrow.
Yeah, you got to get a good start pitching-wise, first thing I've written down. The combo of Stamos and Causey, which I imagine would be your starting combo tomorrow, has to get a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is still a very talented lineup. I think the pitching struggles have been kind of what's held Florida back this year. They were expected to have a lot better pitching group that they just have not had. But the lineup is still very good, and it's headlined by Jack Caglione. I mean, you cannot let this guy start getting hot this weekend, or it's going to be a long weekend. He's that kind of player. So you got to get a good start on the mound. That's the first thing. Second thing, just shake off the past three games offensively. Don't let that build into four, five, six, seven games straight of this. Just shake it off. You know you're still talented. Florida's pitching is not good. I mean, it's pretty plain and simple.
Yeah.
They've struggled mightily this year. It was an elite group last year. It's not this year. Do your thing at the plate, and they're going to give it to you. I mean, they're going to hand it to you. You just have to go and take it. And for my sanity, please get some hits with guys on base. I mean, we can't do this again. You can't get away with it forever, and you certainly can't get away with it with the postseason looming. So just don't go back to bad habits.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. When we return, we'll talk about how the 76ers pushed the Knicks to the maxi last night in the Garden.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
At Wholesale Supply, we're more than just a plumbing, electrical, and HVAC supplier. We're your partners in success. Join our family of customers today and experience the benefits of partnering with us. Enjoy free local delivery so you can focus on what you do best, getting the job done. With wholesale pricing, you'll save big on every purchase. Plus, our fast, friendly support team is here to assist you every step of the way. Our vast selection from top manufacturers ensures you'll find everything you need all under one roof. To find a location near you, visit wholesalesupply.us for more. And remember, Wholesale Supply, open to the public.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Wednesday. That was a quick break. I check my phone for 5 seconds, and I look up, we're back rolling. Good deal. All right, time to move to the association. Great conversation in the first segment about the base vols. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. Now, let's talk about how the 76ers pushed the Knicks to the maxi of elimination last night, but they ended up surviving. Actually, I read that wrong. The 76ers pushed to the maxi of elimination, but they survived, is what I should have said. The New York Knicks should have finished off the Philadelphia 76ers on Tuesday. They should have removed all hope from Tyrese Maxey's naive mind, one that dared to believe a six-point deficit with 28 seconds remaining was no problem. They should have sent Joel Embiid into the offseason abyss, left to wonder only about his 9 turnovers in what should have been an elimination game. They should have moved on to the second round of the NBA playoffs. However, they did not. The Sixers are still alive, returning to Philadelphia for Game 6 of a first-round series, and now trail 3-2 after pulling off another comeback that never should have been on Tuesday. They drowned the Knicks 112-106 in overtime after a miraculous Tyrese Maxey-led run during the final 28.9 seconds of regulation. So I get home from the show last night, and these games have started a little bit early, so by the time I get back, it's like fourth quarter. And the Knicks were, you know, kind of taking, you know, pulling away like I expected they would. Really hostile environment in Madison Square Garden. Everyone's very excited. And then it's 96-90 with about 30 seconds left. I'm like, okay, you know, Knicks are moving on. Big questions for the Sixers to figure out this summer. And then Tyrese Maxey comes down, hits a and-one-three. Josh Hart misses a free throw. Tyrese Maxey comes down, hits a three from the logo, and boom, this thing's going to overtime. My takeaway is that Tyrese Maxey is the guy they invested in when they decided to move on with James Harden. When they said, James Harden, go ahead and go. We don't need you. We've got Tyrese Maxey, a younger guy, a better team player, a little bit less expensive player. They invested in Tyrese Maxey, and it's paid off. 46 points last night for him. That's an incredible performance. Now, on the flip side, Joel Embiid, I don't know if it's injuries or the injury still lingering around, but 19 points in an elimination game is not going to cut it. And in elimination games in his career, he's only averaging 21 points a night, which is the lowest for any MVP in the NBA history. So I applaud what Tyrese Maxey has done. That was an incredible performance. He's going to have to do it again if Embiid keeps on playing like this. The other thing is, when do we start to have the question about Embiid's postseason reputation? Because we've kind of given him a pass in years past for, you know, maybe it wasn't necessarily all his fault. James Harden last year had 12 turnovers and what would have been a game-clinching win. You know, he's battled injuries throughout his career. But now it's the same story once again, battling injuries going into the postseason, underperforming in the biggest moments as an MVP caliber player that averages 35 in the regular season. So it's in my opinion, time to start having that question about Joel Embiid. A great win for the Sixers. They'll need it again for Maxey when they go back home for Game 6. But I think there's good and bad to take away if you're a Sixers fan in this one.
Yeah, Tyrese Maxey has arrived, my first takeaway in this one. Again, we knew about Joel Embiid's fourth quarter struggles in the postseason, especially coming into this game, and we knew somebody was going to have to step up, and that in this case, it was Tyrese Maxey in the biggest moment of the year when it seems like all is lost. I mean, incredible 7-point run by him in the last one.
Yeah.
I've almost never seen something like that.
Yeah.
It's his biggest moment as a Sixer in his career. Huge moment for him, and now, I mean, what are we going to get from him in Game 6? I'm really curious to see how well he shows up on his home floor in Game 6. That's going to be an awesome storyline. But speaking of Joel Embiid, ugh, brutal. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know what it is anymore. It's sloppy. More sloppy than we're used to seeing out of Joel Embiid, of all people.
9 turnovers.
Yeah, that jumped off the page. I mean, we're just not used to seeing that kind of performance out of him. The Sixers had to scramble to get this game into overtime, mm-hmm. when normally you'd expect, oh, Joel Embiid's going to have them in position. He is unable to get them in position so far in this series, at least. His struggles have kind of raised some doubt. You know, even if we get a Maxey performance in Game 6, even if they push it to 7, you know, is this team built to win a series? Is this team built to move forward? You know, are they going to have to make some changes? They've really left some questions. But so have the New York Knicks. They left the door open. The number one thing you don't want to do is in a playoff series is give the team that is down a chance to go back to their home floor in Game 6. This is the number one thing you don't want to do because they got momentum now, they got hope now, and they're playing in front of their home crowd to send it to a Game 7, and they just want to get another game on the road. It's the number one thing you don't want to do. It's a missed opportunity of epic proportions for New York, who could have easily closed this series at home in 5. Now you're looking at you have to play really good basketball to keep from going 7.
Yeah.
At the end of this series.
Yeah, no way around it. This was a coming out party for Maxey.
Yeah.
He has risen to the moment this whole season. He's proven to be the perfect sidekick for Joel Embiid, and now he's won Philadelphia playoff game single-handedly. 46 points, 22 in the fourth and overtime combined, had 9 assists as well. This was his night. The Maxey game, if you want to call it.
Yeah.
It helped the Sixers withstand a relatively mediocre Embiid performance. 19 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, 5 blocks, 9 turnovers. You know, the 19-16-10-5 sounds good, but his efficiency, very low, 9 turnovers, turning the ball over. They had to survive this game because of Embiid's performance. And this shows me, talking about what Maxey was able to do, that he's able in moments like last night to trump Embiid's struggles. He's now a big enough time player to perform in these big moments. This is, again, why they invested in him and why they went on with James Harden and did away with him, is they think Maxey can be the guy. He is the guy now. I think he arrived last night.
What better time for him to arrive than with your season on the line, down 6 with 30 seconds to go? I mean, he had a good, great game up before that.
Yeah.
But I think the true moment where he arrived as the superstar, as the guy, was this 7-point run with 30 seconds to go. That is superstar stuff. That's stuff that guys like LeBron James do. That's stuff that guys like Steph Curry do. That's the kind of, you know, Jalen Brunson, even on the other side for the New York Knicks. That's something you'd expect out of maybe a Brunson.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't seen it out of Maxey. What better time for him to arrive? Massive performance. And now, again, if you're the Knicks, you got to at least be worrying about that. Headed to Philly in Game 6. Now with Maxey with that kind of momentum.
Yeah.
Now he knows he's the guy. He's had his superstar performance. I'd be worried if I was a Knicks fan right now.
I would too. So the game will now head to, or the series will now head to Game 6 in Philadelphia. You know, a possibility for the Sixers to win at home, and then we go to a Game 7 in New York. You know, a couple days ago, you thought this series was over. Now the 76ers have some life. Let's head to the phones real quick. 865-288-3131. Joshy Boy joins us. What's up, Joshy?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well.
Can I make a bold prediction?
Go ahead.
The defending champ Denver Nuggets, who won the NBA Finals last year.
Yes.
They're not going to get back to the Finals. They're not even going to sniff the Western Conference Finals because I have the Minnesota Timberwolves beating them in 6 or 7 games.
It's not as far-fetched as it was before the Suns series to me.
Here's what my approach on this series, because I think the aura is very high on the Timberwolves right now because what they were able to do to the Suns, a team with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal,
right,
a lot of publicity around them. But in reality, and we've broke it down on here, the Suns were kind of a mess all season long. We're never able to find any chemistry. They didn't have a point guard. 26-19 when all three of those big three play. I think it was more of a product of the Suns not being a complete basketball team and the Timberwolves being a complete basketball team, just rolling over the Suns, because the Timberwolves have the chemistry, they've got the pieces, they've got a well-rounded group. The Suns,
right,
like I said the other day, they're a pickup squad.
Yep.
The Nuggets faced off against a Lakers team that I still think is the second-best team in the Western Conference. They match up really well with anyone. It took 2 buzzer beaters to beat the Lakers, and the Lakers led for 75% of the series. So I think the opinions are low on the Nuggets because of what they did in the Lakers series, and the Timberwolves are very high in people's opinions for what they did against the Suns.
And
I think the Nuggets are still a better team.
But, William, you do have to agree the Nuggets didn't have the role players that they had from last year to this year on the bench.
I agree, but they still get big production from KCP, MPJ, and Aaron Gordon. And, I mean, you know, that's what won them the series against the Lakers. Now, against the Timberwolves, they've got some guys off the bench that can play too. Kyle Anderson, Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Yeah.
They're going to need, you know, guys like Reggie Jackson and Christian Brown and I can't remember the other guy, the lanky dude, Christian Watson. Christian Watson. They'll need them to have bigger production, but I still think the Nuggets are the better team.
Wait, how many games are you predicting them to win in?
I'd say Nuggets in 6 or 7, realistically. Yeah. I mean, I think the Timberwolves are a good team. Matchup-wise, I think it's very identical teams. Post presence, good guard play, good scoring around the perimeter. One team's got Jokic. The other team, you know, Jokic and Murray, I think, is a little bit too much for the Timberwolves. Anthony Edwards is incredible. I think the big matchup is who guards Jamal Murray and where does Mike Conley fit in defensively?
True. But I think the two big X factors for Minnesota are going to be Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I mean, it will. I think the Nuggets are going to try and space it out like they always do and just kind of have a one-on-one with Jokic and Gobert, and the Nuggets probably think they have the advantage there. But the problem is if you bring Karl Anthony Towns down low and try to double Jokic, then, you know, you've got three guys that can shoot around the perimeter.
That you can kick it out to.
Yeah.
So, moving to baseball, after last night's loss to Lipscomb, I'm not really worried, but what I am worried about these past three games for the offense has not been really, really productive as it has been this season. What do you guys think?
Well, a couple things, and we kind of talked about it a few minutes ago. I mentioned the fact that they can't seem to get a hit with a base runner on anymore. It's kind of the old problem that we talked about where you can't get the clutch hit. And also the strikeout bug has returned as well. This is a problem these teams have had a couple years now. Kavaris Tears especially had a couple just ugly strikeouts, ugly at-bats last night. Several guys just, I mean, really gross at-bats where they're swinging for home runs and not hitting the ball, not even coming close. It's a bug this team's had in the past, but they had gotten rid of it earlier in the year. Problems have come back. Bad habits have come back. They just need to snap out of it. They'll be fine. I'm not panicked yet, but some issues that had kind of reared their ugly heads again.
Is it a major concern come tournament time in your guys' opinion?
If it's still a problem by the tournament, yeah, it's a major concern by then. I mean, we still have, what, 3-4 weeks until the tournament, I think, at this point, so – if they haven't ironed it out by then, it's a major concern for sure.
So with the portal for Tennessee basketball, how many more open spots does Tennessee have? Is it three?
Two, three? Something
I think
like that.
I think it's two.
Yeah.
I think it's two. Because you had Adu, Awaka, Connect.
Jefferson, DeLeon, Connect. Vescovy and Josiah Jordan-James. You had seven guys leave.
Yeah.
And you've had Akpara,
Milicic,
Dubar,
Bishop. You got three spots left.
Three spots left.
So, assuming Tennessee does land Chaz Lanier, with those two remaining spots, what would you do with them?
Backup point guard.
Yeah.
Backup point guard.
That's real. It's realistically the only thing I can think they could bring in. Because you've got your center, you've got another center in Estrella. It'd be tough to say, hey, come here and be our third wheel center-wise.
Right.
So I think backup point guard's really the only thing you need, and I think once you have that, you've got a good squad.
So assuming they do get a backup point guard, would you try to go mid-major to find that guy who can fill the minutes of the role of ZZ while he's on the bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal prospect would be a guy coming over from mid-major that wants to start at the D1 level eventually but needs to kind of take a backseat and develop and get his feet wet in big-time Power 6 basketball. So I think if you could go find a guy from a mid-major level that's willing to come in and take that back seat for a year, then next year be the starter, I think that's a perfect fit.
Yeah. All right, guys. William, tonight's picks, I'm going with Dallas over the Clippers, and I'm going with the Celtics to finish it over the Heat. See you.
I like both of those, Joshy. We appreciate you calling in, as always. Let's see. I guess let's cover the Cavs Magic game, and then we'll come back after that, do best bets, and talk about the Bucks game. But the Cavs stood their ground at home last night as the Cavaliers and Magic stagger back to their stools preparing for a sixth round. A few truths were revealed last night, and most significant is the fact that the Cavs may not have the best player in the series at all. Donovan Mitchell entered as the biggest name 2 weeks ago, but Paolo Banchero is maturing a bit faster than expected. Last night, Banchero was magnificent, dragging a young Magic roster into his greatness. Orlando lost the game 104-103, came down to the wire, as the Cavs are now one win away from winning the series. But Paolo Banchero has been the story in this one. Another incredible performance from him, single-handedly carrying this team on his back. My takeaways from Game 5, I think in this series, the home team is going to win the game. I think Orlando wins Game 6. But last night, the first two times the Cavs played at home, the Magic looked terrible. Last night, they were in it till the very last second. I mean, they had an opportunity to tie it. Wagner just got blocked. No Jared Allen last night for the Cavs. So you thought the Magic had a little bit of a chance to kind of steal one. You go down the wire, comes down to a last-play scenario. But the Magic have improved in this own series. The first two times they played on the road, they got wiped. This time around, they come prepared and were, you know, in it to the final moment. But Paolo Banchero is a big reason why. Donovan Mitchell has been up and down. We know he has playoff struggles. Last night, I think he went 1 of 7 from three. Couldn't get it going. Now had a big performance in the fourth when it mattered. But Banchero is slowly becoming the star that we thought he could be, that first-round pick a couple of years ago. I don't think it's ridiculous to say he's the best player in this series.
I don't think it is either. And I think really the Magic as a whole, I think it's a product of they've settled in. And I said the same thing with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I said once they settled in Game 2 of that series, they looked like a completely different team.
Yeah.
After the fire drill in Game 1, I think that's the same with Orlando. It just took them a couple games, you know, to kind of get their feet wet. Because, again, this is not an experienced roster at all.
Yeah.
And they lost both the first two games, and they go into Game 3. All of a sudden, it's like a switch flipped, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, they're a different team. And they come out Games 3 and 4, play really well offensively. I thought the offense was the story of those two games in Orlando for the Magic. They come down to Game 5, and their offense looks good again. So I think, yeah, obviously you would like to steal one on the road. They got very close, made Cleveland panic, but they're growing. They're maturing. This team is way ahead of schedule, in my opinion. And, man, Paolo Banchero, you knew he was going to be good. You just didn't know kind of when that was going to happen.
Yeah.
In terms of postseason play. He's been good all year, but you didn't know when it was going to happen in a postseason environment. Mm-hmm. It sure happened last night. He's on the scene. If they win a Game 6, now I know the home team has kind of won every game in this series, but – Game 7 is still Game 7, and I got to be honest, I would love to see Paolo Banchero against Donovan Mitchell in Game 7 in this series.
Yeah, it'd be fun. You've got to make adjustments in the playoffs, and the great coaches do. That's why Darvin Ham and the Lakers are in Galveston now. Magic coach Jamal Mosley made probably the most important adjustment of the series so far, moving Wendell Carter Jr. into the starting lineup at center for Jonathan Isaac before Game 3. But I think it's now time for him to make another adjustment here. And I think it's you've got to up Paolo Banchero's minutes and Franz Wagner's minutes. I think you've got to up them up even more because they're the most consistent players on this roster, the guys that are giving you the most production. Haven't gotten a lot from Cole Anthony. Markelle Fultz, both of them are struggling to shoot the three ball, which is kind of the Achilles heel of this Magic team. Really good defense, can't shoot the three ball well. But the lineup of Suggs, Suggs, Wagner, Banchero, Isaac, Carter has been a really good group, and they finished the last 77-22 last night in the game. I think if you roll with them a lot more, extend their minutes, you get the best production out of this team with them, I think you have the opportunity to win at game six at home and then go back to Cleveland. And with that lineup again, I think you have the best shot. No Gary Harris hurts them.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. That's what I was going to say. You got to adjust to obviously deal with Gary Harris being out. I'm not sure where that's going to come from. I'm not sure who gets those minutes because, like you said, Anthony struggling to shoot the three ball. You could go with Fultz in that spot, I guess. Not a great look, but again, if you can up Bancaro's minutes, I think that makes up for Fultz's struggles. Hey, he did shoot 3-for-3 last night in his 15 minutes. Now, he did not shoot a three. But with Bancaro shooting, you know, Bancaro, Wagner, Jalen Suggs shooting most of your threes, if you up those guys' minutes,
yeah,
I think you could get away with that. But you're right. I mean, you hit it on the head. They need to have more minutes because the guys that are going to close this series, a Bancaro, a Wagner, need to be in the game more. 38 minutes in a game in this series is not going to cut it for a guy when he has the night that Paolo Bancaro did.
Yeah, you need that, you know, 42, 44-minute range. You know, give him a blow right before quarters. You know, like right before the third quarter, take him out for 2 minutes, kind of give him a 4 minute, 5 minute rest going into the fourth, maybe sub him or maybe, you know, keep him out for the first minute of the fourth quarter, just try to extend it as much as you can. But the good problem the Magic have is they got a young roster. So it's not like these guys are dead tired.
Right.
They got plenty of energy. Now, you know, I don't suggest anyone playing 44 plus minutes of NBA basketball. I played pickup last week, 7 games. I was dead tired by the second one. But, you know, that's a good problem for this Magic team. They've got these young guys that can go for a good bit. And the Cavs are young too, but, you know, Bancaro and Wagner are still early on in their careers. I think if you up their minutes, get them around that 42, 44 range, they'll be in a lot better shape. All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night and talk about how the Bucks are still hanging around. We'll be back on Overtime.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute? When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbl Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbl crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run Night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there will be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 Club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow, and save the date for May 30th.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Wednesday. Time for our best bets of the night. Your opportunity to make some money with us. My best bet of the night, and it is a two-unit play, the Mavericks money line. I think they get it done tonight in Los Angeles. I'm taking the better team. I'm banking on James Harden and Paul George having a little bit of a regression from their output in game four. And look, this Dallas team is simply the better team, in my opinion. I thought it going into the series. I still believe it. They've already proven that they can win on the road already in this series. They did it in game two. I don't see why they can't do it again tonight. The only thing that kind of concerns me is Luka Doncic. I don't know if you saw during warmups today, their shoot around, heavily taped up leg.
Yep.
And it kind of looked like it was bothering him a little bit in that game on Sunday. But look, again, I think this is the better team. If they just make an adjustment of how they defend James Harden to where he's not allowed to come into the paint and have a complete defensive breakdown, I think the Mavericks win this one. I'm taking their money line for two units.
I've got two plays tonight, both in the NBA. I'm kind of liking these spread or money line and over-under parlay bets that FanDuel offers. They're really cool and really good value as well. I'll start in Miami and Boston. I have Heat plus 13.5 and the over 200.5. Both games in Boston, games 1 and 2, went well over 200.5 total points, and both resulted in a Miami cover in both of those games. This is a huge spread. I hate these huge spreads in playoff games because Boston's not going to leave the starters out there. If they get up by 9-10 points late, they're obviously going to kind of pull the foot off the pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
So I like a Miami cover, even considering the fact that the offense for Miami looked dreadful at home.
Mm-hmm.
I still like them to cover because of what they did in Boston games 1 and 2. I'm just not confident enough to say minus 13.5. So Heat plus 13.5 and the over in Boston and Miami. And I'm going Mavericks money line and the under in Dallas and L.A. Three out of the four games in this series have gone under. The only one that didn't was game 4, which saw that 33 each from Paul George and James Harden, as well as the 40 points from Kyrie Irving, the 29 from Luka Doncic. I don't think that's going to happen again tonight. I don't see Harden and PG replicating that. You kind of talked about it already.
Yeah.
There's no way they do that again, back-to-back games. And no Kawhi Leonard. Dallas, prime spot to steal back the series lead on the road. So I like them money line and under 210.5.
All right, those are our best bets of the night. Time to move over to the final game last night in the association. Also, congrats on your Preds. Big win last night.
Yes, so we'll get to talk about it later in
yes,
the segment.
Yes, yes. So one of the other games last night was this Pacers-Bucks game going on around the same time as the Vancouver timing game in the NHL. But the Pacers, as young and bright and fun as they have been this season, learned a valuable lesson in Game 5 last night. Champions don't go down without a swing. In a first round that is featured, a chess move after chess move, Bucks coach Doc Rivers still had at least one more trick up his sleeve. Closing out a series is one thing. Taking down a stubborn, physical, experienced Bucks team without Damian Lillard and Giannis is another. On Tuesday, Rivers made another subtle tweak to his game plan, switching assignments and placing Chris Middleton on Miles Turner and Brooke Lopez on Aaron Nesmith. I don't know why I said it like that. Milwaukee intended to switch everything across the board and deter Indiana from going to their series bread and butter, having Turner space the floor and beat them from a distance. The Bucks shut that down last night and got huge production from their complementary pieces. I thought it was going to be the funeral for the Bucks last night. However, they get it done in pretty big fashion at home, but it just goes back to their role players. Bobby Portis, a really big outing for him. Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, all these guys got involved, and you have that kind of pestiness from Patrick Beverley, kind of getting some chippiness involved, trying to get under these young guys' skin for the Pacers. And now the Bucks kind of have a heartbeat. I don't know if Giannis and Damian are going to play in Game 6, but the question is, do the Bucks have life? I still don't think so, but this gives him at least a little bit of a CPR pump.
It makes me think. Like, it makes you kind of, okay. Maybe they're not dead after all, especially without Giannis and Damian Lillard. I thought they stood no chance last night. That's why I said Pacers minus four.
Yeah.
This is why they hired Doc Rivers, in my opinion, is because he knows how to do this kind of thing.
He hasn't done much of it this season.
Well, he hasn't done much of it this season, but I think it was a flawed system because of the Damian Lillard trade. We talked about that at length on here.
Yeah.
I think it was flawed from the start. Now he's kind of figured out, okay, I can make a little tweak. That's what Doc Rivers has been so good at. He does it again. He's going to give them a chance. Now, he had to go back to Indianapolis and win a game six. I don't think that's going
to
happen personally. The environment in there is going
to
be really good. The Pacers have been rolling in the playoffs, really haven't hit a slump yet. Siakam has played incredibly well. What an addition, by the way, that Pascal Siakam's been for Indianapolis.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Halliburton has been good in the playoffs. Miles Turner has had almost a coming out, not really a coming out party. We already knew what Miles Turner was, but postseason terms, has had a coming out party in this series. Really has been an incredible piece for them. So it'll be tough. Do they have life? No, but I agree. A heartbeat is probably the way I would put it, but even that, I mean, if Giannis and Damian Lillard still don't play, there's just no way.
Yeah, referring to the status of Damian and Giannis, last night Doc Rivers was asked about it, and I was watching it on the TNT Inside the NBA broadcast, and they were laughing because when Doc Rivers was asked about it, he just paused for like 5 seconds, didn't even move, and Charles Barkley was like, I thought he froze for a second, but... Rivers, when asked about it, said, quote, I don't know how to answer that. I know, I hope, I think they're very, very, very close. So that's the status. Very, very, very close is the status for Damian and Giannis. I don't know if that's enough for Bucks fans to be excited about.
Life, no. Heartbeat, no. Well, that quote, I don't even, are they even have a heartbeat? Are they trying to get the heartbeat back? Is that what this, I think that's probably the territory I'm
telling you, this is a CPR press right here. They're like trying to dig as deep as they can, trying to find some
breath.
This
is the first round of CPR on the Milwaukee Bucks, perhaps? Is it even that? I don't know.
They've been on life alert for a while, so, they've.
Yeah, but they were on that with Damian Lillard and Giannis out
on
the floor.
Oh, I know, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Without them on the floor, I mean, even worse.
That's what I'm saying. It's a tough environment to go play in Indiana. I thought the Bucks crowd was good last night, provided the extra juice. That's a way to kind of knock off a younger, more inexperienced Pacers group. But again, the theme in these playoffs, especially these younger teams, they seem to settle in at home and play a lot better, a lot more comfortable. Game two of that Thunder series, the Thunder really settled in after kind of getting their feet wet. The Magic-Cavs series, the home team has won every game, because it's a little bit easier to play at home when you're a little bit younger. Kind of been the same in this series. Pacers were able to steal one, but now, this goes to game six. I don't know if they have a heartbeat. I don't think they do, but if Damian and Giannis come back, even if they come back, what is Giannis going to look like? Because
I don't know.
Getting back into game shape is pretty tough to do. I mean, Joel Embiid came back. Obviously, he was out for longer. But even when these guys miss 2 to 3 weeks, it kind of takes them a quarter or two to get back in the rhythm.
Well, and this is kind of the kind of injury that you can re-aggravate really easily. So even if he does come back, who's to say he comes out here, it's third possession down the floor, he re-aggravates the injury, and all of a sudden you're right back where you started, and he's back out of the game.
Yeah. We'll have to see. All right, when we come back in the next hour, we'll talk about should the NFL extend the regular season when we return here on Overtime.